Welcome to Bears on Tap, hosted by Kyle Juice Michalski, Quentin Q. Crisco, and the one and only Ron Luce, bringing you all the news, analysis, and opinions on the charter franchise, Chicago Bears.
And welcome back, everybody. We are here to talk about the Chicago Bears and their draft class. And we're going to get into a little NFC North draft grades as we get past the Bears' individual draft picks. But I am joined here by Ron Luce and Juice on Tap, Juice Michalski. Which do you prefer, Juice? Do you prefer Juice Michalski or Juice on Tap?
Juice Michalski. I like Juice Michalski, actually. I never think to put two of them together.
Well, I feel weird because I'm like Ron Luce, and then I'm like Juice. What do I say? Juice
Michalski.
That's what I read. Yeah, Juice Michalski. Mm-hmm. I like it. So how you boys doing today?
Good, man. I think we should be all doing a victory lap after our draft. It's kind of cool. Getting a lot of national publicity. It's nice to see. Also happy to wear Bears gear yet again. Without looking down and making myself want to cry.
I'm right there with you, man. No, it was a fun weekend too. I think NFL draft is just such an exciting weekend. It's cool to see all the building the board stuff come to, its climax with the draft occurring and all the live streams and different things like that. Was fun listening in on night two, Q, with you and Tom and Steve. And obviously it was a blast being on the microphone with you guys on Thursday night. But yeah, man, hey, shit's going really well in Chicago right now for Bears fans.
Yeah, it's a good time. So, I mean, jumping right into the Bears class, I mean, what – I'm going to pull it up here. What stands out to you guys for what the Bears were able to do? We can start with Ron and then go to Juice on this.
I mean, I think the Rome Odunze pick to me is the one that stands out the most. I will say, though, I am blown away about the Austin Booker pick. Absolutely blown away that they got him in the fifth round, because I think he was, I mean, Dane Bugler had him as what, a mid third in his grades. I believe he was the 75th or 76th. Yeah. I mean, he was, I believe he was top 100 on our building the board, top 100 as well.
Yeah, so 85 on just our NFL board for building the board, not the Bears specific one. He was a little higher on the Bears specific one, I think.
There you go. So it just goes to show you got a top 100 player at 144 in this draft. I mean, it's really hard not to like what the Bears did. And again, I think the Odunze pick is the sexy pick. Obviously, we have the reaction video of all of us reacting to it because Williams was such a cemented pick. But like, to me, the Booker pick is just probably my favorite pick, truthfully, of the draft class, just from a value standpoint. And again, this was a guy that every outlet had as a top 100 prospect in this draft. To get him in the fifth round where they did, even giving up the fourth rounder next year, who cares about the fourth next year at this point? And you go fill a need because he's an edge guy? I'm a big fan.
Juice, how about you? What stands out with the Bears draft?
I mean, obviously, when you kill it as much as you do in night one, able to get Caleb and Rome, it's a great start already. There's very little you could probably do in the next couple days to, screw up that draft grade. No matter what, you got, hopefully your generational quarterback and a generational wide receiver all in the same draft, which is awesome. Then you go to a guy like Amagaji. Yeah, maybe it's a reach. Maybe it's a little bit more of a project, but I trust Ryan Poles to evaluate the line. I know that they do this what seems like every year where they pick a guy like this, and Booker probably falls a lot into this same kind of mantra of like, got the physicalities of it. It's all about putting it, onto the field. And two, like, I think a lot of people are blowing up the draft because they picked a punter in the fourth round, but they picked the best punter. The guy is supposedly one of the best prospects that Poles has ever seen. Sure, maybe it's a little early for a punter, but I mean, if you're not going to address the defense with picks at the top of the draft and you're going to address the offense, a punter can help. A punter can pin him back there and make it easier to defend. I mean, there's only so many plays you can call when you're inside the 10. So if he's able to do that any consistently, it's worth it. And they're going to try to protect this defense a lot next year by scoring points. And hopefully Torrey Taylor helps that way and pinning them deep. And that's, I think overall, when you look at the draft, you got to be pleased with it. They didn't go out and get cute at the ninth pick. They took Roma Dunze. And after that, it's all right. Let's reevaluate what we need after that, after this year. And we have a ton of picks to address that and probably a lot of cap space as well. So I love what they did. I think it was a great draft.
Yeah, and I'm with both you guys, man. I think they pretty much crushed it. Like, I mean, I can get nitpicky with the Amagaji and Torrey Taylor picks. And even the Amagaji one, we had him at 133rd on our board. We had him misevaluated the same way we have Kingsley Suamataia misevaluated. It's like these guys who are major projects are so hard to put a true number on because it's like they're going to go way earlier than where we want to rank them based on the film because they have these incredible traits, right? Mm-hmm. But like, looking at the film, this is something I said on the stream, like when I'm watching Yale tape, I do not know how I take that grade and convert it to Alabama tape. You know, how do I compare that? They're two very different things when you're talking about blocking a 230-pound defensive end in front of you who, you know, is not going to sniff the NFL versus blocking like a Dallas Turner in front of you. You know, it's very different things that you're trying to call the same thing. So guys like Amagaji fall down our board for that inherently, but like I'm generally okay with where they picked him. I think I gave the grade like a C minus because I felt like there were a few guys who I might have preferred there, but I understand the thought process here of you've got two more years of Braxton Jones max because you're probably not going to pay him. So going and getting his replacement now makes a lot of sense. You have time to develop him and you're not just throwing the kid in the fire. And maybe, you know, he can take over for Braxton as soon as next year. If not, you're okay. But he has that kind of upside, that kind of the physical traits are really impressive there. So there's a lot to like with Amagaji. And to your point with Taylor, like I gave that a D plus here. And again, that was just because there were a few guys who I like better, and it's a punter. You can't get too excited about a punter pick. Like, you need to temper yourself a little bit. The best way that I could describe it for me is, like, I don't like the value, but I love the player. Like, mm-hmm. We got the crocodile punter, boys. We got the punter from down under. Like, this dude, we saw him, like me and Robert Schmitz were standing at the Senior Bowl watching this dude just pin punt after punt after punt inside the 10-yard line. Like nothing, like just clockwork in practice. Like it was incredible. I'd never seen anything like it. The way it was like he had a remote control that controlled where the ball went. So exciting stuff there. But what do you guys think some realistic expectations are for these guys coming into their rookie year?
That's a great question. I mean, I think obviously Caleb's going to have the most pressure to take that step like immediately. I mean, are you talking in terms of stats? Are you talking in terms of, I mean, obviously like
Roman however Caleb, you want to think it through, like what would you consider a successful outcome for some of these guys as a
rookie? I mean, I think Caleb and Rome need to do, you know, Lord's work on Sunday. You know, they need to be out there making plays, you know, showing up. I mean, in terms of like the rest of it, Amagaji probably going to be a swing guy. You know, maybe that's the projection for this year. I'd be happy if he saw a little bit of time, obviously with injuries and all that, you hope that nobody gets hurt, but it'd be nice to see him on the field a little bit, you know, get his feet wet, take that next step. Obviously, we're expecting Torrey Taylor to be, I put him in the same bubble as I put Roman Caleb. Like, you're going to contribute. You're the guy. And then same with like Austin Booker. If he can become like that type of guy on third down that's able to get to the quarterback, flash a little bit, and be almost that situational pass rush guy, use a little bit of his his frame to develop that. And then as he slowly goes throughout, you know, his season, his development adds more and more to his repertoire. Like, that's, to me, that's what the class looks like to me. You just need to see those three guys and Taylor, Adunze, and Williams be just mainstays in this, on this team. And then, you know, Amagaji and Booker are going to be your project guys. So when they do get time out there, you know, flash a little bit, get to the quarterback and show that you can be that swing tackle guy when you get a chance. And I'd be happy at that point. I think we'd probably all rate this class pretty successful.
Yeah. Ron, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, just a couple of small notes. I think with Odunze, like Juice said, right, you're expecting him to contribute, but I don't think that necessarily needs to be in terms of like certain numbers, right? Like, I'm not expecting him to go out and put up 800 yards receiving or, you know, 8 touchdowns or anything like that. I think just being a meshed part of this receiving core is the key. Like, I want to see Odunze 75% of the snaps per game. I figure they're going to run a lot of three receiver this year. You know, there might be some instances, especially on first down, if Waldron wants to run the ball, that Odunze comes off the field. But overall, I would expect to see him out there for a large majority of offensive snaps. Caleb, I have nothing to add there. I think Juice nailed it on the head. I think same with Taylor. I really do. Like, I think ideally he doesn't punt a lot, right? I mean, that would be best case scenario, as Caleb Williams texted him after he was drafted.
Twice a game, according to Caleb, right?
Yeah, that's totally cool. But, I mean, at the end of the day, though, I feel like the Bears struggled in terms of flipping the field, and that put a lot of pressure on the defense throughout the season. So having a guy that is going to do that more consistently, when you had a defense that was still top 10 in the NFL, that's going to be massive for this offense too, right? We talk about the offense taking pressure off the defense. I think the roles can go the same way, especially when you have special teams contributing like that. I think for Amagaji, best case scenario, he doesn't play at all this season. I would like to see what he does in the preseason. But just kind of to your point, right, if he doesn't play, it means nobody's getting hurt. And I think that's the best case scenario for the Bears offensive line. And then with Booker, Juice nailed it. I think at the beginning, he just needs to be that third down guy. Walker can be your first and second down, you know, defensive end that stops the run. But I think over the course of the season, I want to see his snap count increase. I want to see him start taking some of those first and second downs away from Walker. And again, eventually – we talked about it last year, right, when we were coming into the season as a group here. You know, it doesn't have to be linear, but as long as the end development at the end of the season is higher than where it was at the beginning, that's successful to me, especially with a guy like Austin Booker. So, but otherwise, I think Juice nailed a lot of the core points. Those are just a couple little details I wanted to add.
Ron, you sounded just like Theo Epstein there. You know, development is not linear. You know, it's up and down. It's...
I mean, it's not also a bad
I'll
thing.
Sound like I'll sound like
no, Theo no, no. That's a compliment, but it was no, hilarious to me.
I'll sound like Theo and say too that I enjoy Murphy's bleachers than most of the other places. I don't know if you guys saw that clip that was surfing around the social media streams today about him. They asked him, I think it was a bar in Boston or Cubby Bear, and he was like, "Murphy's bleachers," and I was like, "Smart man."
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys on most of the stuff you said here. I think one note that should be made. Amagaji has played left guard. He played left guard his first year at Yale. So there's some guard versatility there too, where if a Tevin Jenkins goes down, you might be turning to him rather than asking Ryan Bates to become the left guard and then switching your center on your young quarterback. I do think that type of flexibility is nice to be able to keep the continuity for Caleb at center, which does make me question a little bit what Coleman Shelton's role is on this team. But I'm fine with having a quality backup center. So that's just fine, especially at his salary. And then I think one thing that I've been kind of seeing is some outsized expectations for Rome Odunze this year. I just want to say, you know, let's temper those a little. He's going to be the number three wide receiver on this team. We're not talking, like you said, around 800 yards. If anything, like if you were a betting person, you wanted to go bet his props, over touchdowns might be the one that you'd consider, because he's probably going to be a red zone threat for them. But outside of that, I mean, I don't know if I'm looking to hammer any overs on his season, because he's got Keenan Allen and DJ Moore ahead of him. It's just going to be a fight to get those targets.
And don't forget Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett either. Yeah. I mean, those are more mouths that you have to feed too.
If that's the case too, do you think we find him returning some punts too? I mean, because I know it's possible. Done that at Washington.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, I don't know who their punt returner is right now. If Dante Pettis makes the team, maybe it's him. I do hate to put, you know, the number 9 overall pick out there returning punts, but it's possible. I mean, he's done it before. He has experience. He's had success doing it. So
would you, I don't know. Question on that front, because of the new kickoff rules and a lot of teams, a lot of the graphics that show kind of explaining the rule to these teams show two return men back there in that landing zone. Would you put Odunze back there with Avalus Jones on kickoff maybe, where there's a little less of that, a guy sprinting downfield full speed at you on a punt, you know, where now with the new rules, there's a more, a little more of a mitigated buffer where there's less risk to get hurt. Cause I think that to me, maybe is the best place to see him. And maybe you'll let, like you said, if Dante Pettis makes the team, be that punt return guy. But I think having Odunze back there with Jones, these two guys that have that ability on the returns side, I can make the kickoff fun again in Chicago, probably for the first time since, you know, 84 had a brief stop here before, you know, 83.
Yeah, I mean, I'd consider it with Odunze, but honestly, I think Juice Herbert is tailor-made for this punt, for this kick return rule, and him and Velus can be a nasty combo back there. That, like, you know, Juice Herbert has the breakaway speed. He has the one cut kind of mentality already, and that it's kind of perfect for what they're doing with the kick return. So I don't know if I'd want to take that away from him, because I think he has a chance to put up some really nice numbers doing it.
It's a good point. And a quick comment here too from Bruja 7, saying Tyler Scott also certainly an option to return, less risky.
Yeah,
you know, he is your effectively fourth receiver at this point.
So, and I think the thing that when the rule came out, the people were saying is it's more running backs, like the running back type runners that really find more success under this model, at least where they tested it. What was it, the XFL that did it?
Yeah.
And to me, that's like Velus Jones is more of a running back type runner, right? He's more burly. He's going to break some tackles. He's going to run hard at you, not evade you. And I feel like that's the type of runner you want. And I'm not sure Tyler Scott's going to fit that same thing. I think he's more your traditional kick return, punt return type guy. I think the archetype for what you want on the new kick returns is just a little different.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And maybe, again, maybe then Tyler Scott is that guy that makes the punt return.
Right.
If Dante Pettis isn't making the team. But that's a great point, Q, because, like, I think that's why Cordero Patterson was such a great kick returner for so long. He was never a punt returner. He was just a kick returner. And it's because of kind of that running back mentality, right? Patterson ultimately became kind of a gadget running back in his career. Hell, we saw Velus Jones start taking handoffs last year and them getting creative with him out of the backfield. So that's an incredibly great point about the new kickoff scheme. And I think it's such a wild card, too, that we got to think about going into the season.
I think it's just nice to see that there's options. And for forever, it was like, if this guy doesn't work, we got to pick off the scrap heap. It's nice to see that they're going to have, like, a few guys who could do it and maybe a few guys who start to really take the role and run with it. But, I mean, like I said, it's just good to see that, like, you have depth. I love what Ryan Pohl said in his presser, too. It'd be hard to make this team. Finally. Like, it seemed like for so long, it was like, oh, yeah, we're just going to roll this squad out here and pick off the scrap heap, and there's better guys elsewhere. Like, this is going to be a tough team to make. That's awesome. That speaks to how well he's done turning this over in the last couple of years.
Yeah, they've really filled out the roster really well. Like, you look at the O-line. I mean, you're talking about, like, is Larry Borum going to make this team? You know, I mean, and that hasn't been a question the last 3 years. It's been he's going to make the team because who else do we got? And now there's some competition there. There's some real guys ahead of him who might beat him out. And I think that, like, in the receiver room, you probably don't have as much of that. But, like, at running back, you got that. At corner, I feel like you've got a good amount of that. And it's in the trench or on the D line, I should say, not the trench, the D line. I think you're still crossing your fingers a little bit, hoping someone gets cut that shouldn't be. But either way, that I think between this draft and what they've done in free agency and trades, they're sitting really pretty with how this offensive roster, especially, is looking. Go ahead.
Did you like anybody that they picked up in the undrafted process? Is there anybody that like jumps out to you that you really liked? Or I know this is tough too, because with NIL money now, everything's so watered down. So there's just not a lot of talent that's usually out there. But is there a guy maybe worth mentioning with this group?
The only guy I can say that I actually watched is Keith Randolph Jr. out of Illinois. I do think there's something there. I'm not sure if he's going to make the roster. I'm not sure exactly what is there, if that makes sense. Like, there are moments that you see him on tape, you're like, okay, he's got some nice bend. He's kind of a flexible athlete, but he's not super athletic, and he's not the most powerful guy. I truthfully thought that he was going to go to a 3-4 team and be a 3-4 D end. I thought that was the best fit for him because he can hold up against the run pretty well, but he doesn't have any traits that pop out at you either, aside from a little bit of bendability, like where he's just, he can get his body contorted in weird positions and still be effective out of it and still generate power from those weird positions. But outside of that, there wasn't much that stood out. So I'm not sure that he's a guy who makes the roster. I think he's a hardworking guy. I think he's a real like good locker room guy from everything I've read about him. So maybe he has a shot, but I don't think the scheme is necessarily ideal for him either. So unless he's going to pack on weight and be a one technique, maybe that's an option. But outside of that, I can't honestly say I've watched any of the other UDFAs they got.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So you guys want to get into some of the grades that we got here for just kind of take our victory lap of everyone thinks Chicago crushed the draft except for Mel Kiper and Pete Prisco?
Yeah, let's do it.
Mel Kiper's gripe with it?
I don't know. I didn't even read it. I was just going through it so fast to get the grades. But Mel Kiper gave him a B and Prisco gave him a B. Everyone else gave him an A minus or an A.
My only thought is the why they would have potentially given a B maybe is just because with those third and fourth round picks, maybe they quote unquote reached a little bit. Yeah. I think that when you're the Bears, again, this was such a unique class for the Bears too, because obviously they had few picks, right? Because of what you just brought up, right? That bargain bin shopping they had to do over the course of the 23 season. They moved a lot of draft capital, bringing guys like Dan Feeney and bringing some of these other guys. But then on top of it, you know, sure, maybe they didn't go and add that, you know, another D tackle maybe in the third or fourth round. Maybe they didn't go add another interior offensive lineman at that point. Sure, they go out and they get a little more of a project developmental tackle, but you went and still got things that are going to help this football team win. Like, they were the best, you know, in the best position that number one team that's had a team that's had the top pick, pardon me, has had in a long time. So I think it was such a weird dynamic of the draft class, maybe, if that makes sense, that because there was just less picks, I think that's maybe where guys like Kiper and Prisco kind of knocked them a little bit. But I tend to agree with just about everybody else. I would say at worst, this was an A-minus draft class when you consider what they added. It's the quality of what they added over so much of the quantity.
Yeah, and then we got Brugler giving them the top rank in his rankings. He doesn't do letters. He just does rankings. So Bears were number one on Brugler's, which is nice. But the Lions were right behind them. Lions were third on Brugler's rankings, and they averaged a B plus across all these grades. I mean, you see PFF gave them an A and quite a few Bs in there for them, but people really liked Detroit's class, and I tend to agree. I think they really had a nice day. We're going to pull it up here for you guys, and we'll read through it too for anyone who's listening, not watching. But let's see, not Denver, Detroit. There we go. I mean, the first they got Terry and Arnold, then they got Ennis Rakestraw, who we had 30th on our board at the 61st pick. Then they pulled one of the biggest head scratchers of the draft by trading up to 126 to take an offensive tackle out of British Columbia, which I have heard today that there are some people who think this guy is kind of like a Jordan Mailata, like where it's mm-hmm. like he didn't really play football until like recently, but the athletic traits are just outstanding, which in that case, maybe it does make some sense. But I mean, I still gave him an F on that pick because that's just It's unheard of, right? It's just bizarre.
Yeah.
And then Sione Vaki at 132, Mekhi Wingo at 189, who we had at 76th on our board. Super bursty defensive tackle. And then at 210, they got Christian Mahogany, who I was a lot lower on than a lot of people, but the athletic traits are loud. They're there, and he's an aggressive SOB. Like, I even had him at 173rd being low on him, and so that means they still got value relative to where I had him ranked. A lot of people saw him as a third, fourth round pick.
I think it's funny, too, because you look back to last year, and everyone gave him just hell for their draft, and then you look back and look how they did. I mean, they went about it differently than probably any of these guys would, but I mean, they're smart over there. They built their team really well over the course of the last couple of years. And I mean, it's still Jared Goff at quarterback, but I mean, you know, my opinion on him, but I expected the entire North to do well. I mean, the Packers usually draft fairly well. And I know Detroit, they were kind of reaching on a quarterback, JJ McCarthy, but he has talent. He has the trades. We'll just see how that goes.
And yeah. I will say with Detroit's class last year, I'm still critical of that. I think that class was drafting to win now when they weren't quite there yet. And I still think that might cost them a little bit in the long run of like their ability to continue being a Super Bowl contender. Like, I think it might keep them more towards just a playoff team at some level because they took a step back and said, okay, no, we're going in on what we need right now, as opposed to taking the top talent.
Yeah. I think though, there's a lot of opportunity though, where you can look at this draft class Q and kind of say that they did that a little more this year, with just going out and getting top talent. They were in a beautiful spot, right? I mean, you were one of the final four teams in the NFL a year ago. You know, one of their glaring needs was corner, right? You know, they need a cornerback, and they went out and got two guys that, by building the board standards, were top 30 players in this draft in their first two picks. And then I know there's a lot of meh about Manu out there, but again, when you have the Taylor Deckers and the Penny Sewells of the world, he's a perfect guy to sit behind those guys and learn, especially if he is this Jordan Mailata type, you know, hasn't played a lot of football. They were playing with house money effectively in this draft, if you really look at it for Detroit. And then again, you go out and get a nasty guy who's bursty like Wingo. Vaki, I think, is interesting because they drafted him as a running back. Mind you, he played a little bit of running back at Utah. And when they called his name, they called him a back. I know he's, you know, in the draft process, everybody looked at him as a safety, but I think that's kind of a fascinating pick too in itself. But then again, with Mahogany, same way, right? I mean, the Lions had one of the best offensive lines in football. You can go out and get that guy later in the draft. He can sit a year, and then maybe he turns into this late round gem that is a starter for this team going forward. So again, I've learned now after a few drafts from Brad Holmes and company up there in Detroit to just trust what they're doing. Very similar, I think, to what Ryan Poles has done in Chicago. Like, they have constantly hit on guys, not only in the top rounds of the draft that come in and fill needs, but also these guys in the later rounds that maybe they're not, you know, Pro Bowlers and you know, all NFL guys, but they're still meaningful contributors on a winning football team.
Yeah, I agree. And you just stoked my interest. So Giovanni Manu, 6'7", 350 pounds. That's a unit.
He's a
right
big,
there.
He's
That's
a big
an absolute unit. I kind of get why you take him at 130 now. I mean, that's a dude.
He's huge. Again, that is truly a calculated risk with Giovanni Manu. Like, that is them sitting there and looking at the board and Dan Campbell going, there's something there with him. And Holmes goes, okay. And again, because it's a luxury right now, they didn't need to go get the offensive tackle that's going to compete for a starting job. You have two Pro Bowlers on either one of your bookends. Go get the kid that's a big what if and see what happens, you know, especially when he's that big and he's that athletic. Just give it a shot. Worst case scenario, you say, hey, we tried. He was a fourth round pick. Whoop-dee-dee. We still have Taylor Decker and Penny Sewell. We're fine. Yeah. Or you know, Decker retires from the NFL because he's been around for a decade plus, and then you just throw this kid in there, or you move Sewell over and throw this kid at right tackle, and you say, look at what we found, a shiny new toy in the later rounds of the draft.
Man, I'll tell you what, their O-line is not lacking for depth, I can tell you that much. Adding Christian Mahogany and that dude, like, that O-line's going to stay good. And I think Mekhi Wingo is going to be a really nice addition for them. Their D line was really lacking depth last year. And when their best D tackle went down, they were just kind of a black hole in the middle of their D line. Mekhi Wingo is a guy who, like, at the very least, he can be a bursty disruptor. Like, he's like 285 pounds. So if he can't add that more weight, then he is somewhat limited there. But within his role, I think he's really talented.
Yeah, he was a guy that I liked, Q, when we were going through the prospect class, because D-tackles was obviously yours and mine to kind of look at. But, I mean, both of those LSU D-tackles I thought were fascinating prospects. And, yeah, you know, again, to get him with that value that late in the draft, even if he comes in and he's a rotational piece on that defensive line, that's a huge grab in the sixth round for any team when you can get a guy who – is probably going to give you some level of on-field contribution in year one as a sixth-round selection.
Yeah, a sixth-rounder giving you anything year one is a win. Like, that's
– heck yeah.
That's nice. So then we can take a look at Minnesota. So Minnesota had one of the most divisive grades here, probably in the league. Honestly, I didn't do it for the whole league. But, I mean, you're seeing everything from an A to a C-plus in there. And, I didn't – check how low most of these go. I feel like most of them probably don't go much below C. So a C is probably about the bottom that you're going to get on draft grades. Maybe some people will give you a D, but for the most part, it's kind of weird. Like, if you think about a test, right? Like, go back to high school, taking a test. There are definitely tests where no one in the class gets a D, right? So I think that's what the NFL draft is kind of like. Because I've
grading on a curve.
I seem to always find a way.
I have sat here last year. I did it, and then I was like, I'm never doing this again. Putting grades on every draft class because I was like trying to numerically do it, like find mathematical ways to take boards and put grades on it, and it was hell to try to get it. So I was giving lowest grades as an F, right? Because no one fails that badly unless you're taking Bo Nix at 12 or something. Like, that's the only way that you can really get an F doing it mathematically.
Shots have been fired from you today.
But so let's take a look at Minnesota's class here, because they're probably one of my lower grading classes in general, even though they do have a good amount of talent, which, as I was saying, probably means a C. But, I mean, I look at this and I see one pick I like. And the rest of them, it's like JJ is like fine, you know, that's fine. He was 68th on our board, which isn't a fair assessment because it's quarterbacks and they're always going to get pushed up. But just based on film, upside, downside, he came out to 68th in our grading system on the board. Grant, if we needed a quarterback and we were sitting there at 10, probably would have taken JJ. But outside of that, Dallas Turner is the only one here where I'm like, that's the pick. That's a great pick. That's strong. That, you know, seventh best player on our board. They got him at 17. You can't fight that. That's a great pick. But outside of that, the rest of them, I was just it's fine. They traded away all their draft capital to go get Dallas Turner. So it's kind of – I kind of sit there going like, man, you guys gave a lot for that. Between what you gave up to get 23 and then what you gave up to move up from 23 to 17 for him, I don't know. I don't know how much these grades factor in the trades, but what do you guys think when you look at this class?
Go ahead, Luz.
Bunch of who's that guy?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't watch four of these players.
Yeah,
I watched 200 players in this draft class.
That's saying something.
Definitely is saying something. I mean, I think, you know, the Turner pick, I do really like. Obviously, losing Danielle Hunter to free agency going to Houston was a huge gaping hole in that defense that was already kind of being torn down to the studs because of cap issues. You know, going and getting a young player like Turner, who by all means looks like as close to a surefire thing as you can get in the draft process in terms of an edge, I think that was a big get. You know, I think the McCarthy pick isn't horrific. I mean, at least if you are Minnesota and you're saying, hey, we're bringing in a young quarterback, what better way to get him into the league than having Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson on the outside for a throw to? Like,
yeah,
it's kind of like the Bears, right? You give Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, and Keenan Allen, and now Romo Odunze, right? I think it's the same play, but I look at the rest of this draft class and I go, those are all depth selections at best to me for Minnesota. And Minnesota was they were okay last year. You know, obviously a lot of injuries to Kirk really derailed their season, but they're going to be kind of a fascinating case study to see after this draft class. And they're going to need a lot out of those top two guys to salvage this draft class as a successful class. I think let's just call it what it is.
I think this draft looks like the byproduct of NIL a lot too. I mean, when you're picking this late, when you have four picks at 6 and 7, it's just going to be a crapshoot, right? I mean, it's a lot of guys you don't know. It's a lot of guys that are, you know, just at the end of their run for college football and are just in the draft. I mean, like we said earlier, this whole draft is going to matter how well J.J. McCarthy plays. It'll look great if he's good. After that, it's a lot of lower-end picks.
Yeah, I mean, so there's one thing that this class reminds me of, this draft class, this 2021 Bears draft class of just Justin Fields, Tevin Jenkins, Larry Borum, Daz Newsome, Thomas Graham, Kyrus Tonga. Just like they hit some stuff in there, but outside of Khalil Herbert in the sixth round, it's like you're essentially talking about a three-man class, right? Justin Fields, Tevin Jenkins, Khalil Herbert, and the rest are, you know, they're gone or end of the bench guys. And
isn't Kyrus Tonga ironically a Viking right now?
Yeah, he is. Or he was last year.
He was at least last year.
He burnt out of the league. I think there were attitude issues there. But a lot of times when you're taking these guys who fell that far, like who were considered like third or second round talents and fell to the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, there's big character flags like that. And there's no way to tell that from a, you know, independent analyst side like we would be. Because we can't talk to the guys. We don't have the connections. Like, we don't know who they are as a person. And I think there was stuff with Thomas Graham that it just never worked out with a team. I want to say he went to Seattle after the Bears to go follow Sean Desai. And it didn't work out there. And just he fell out of the league.
I just remember that was like a thing for like a flash in the pan.
He was extremely talented. He was extremely talented. For him. Yeah, he played great for like a three-game stretch, but didn't work. All right, let's take a look at our last one. Green Bay, who came 21st in Dane Brugler's rankings, but their grades are really consistent. They're just like a B. Outside of a few of these grades, which give them a B-minus or a B-plus, they are a flat B. And that feels about right for what Green Bay has historically kind of drafted like under Gutekunst, like where they just have a million picks. Some of them are good. Some of them are really questionable, and a fair amount of them tend to work out.
Yeah, good old Gunst. Yeah, I mean, I think where their draft class is really worth it to me is in the later rounds. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's where they really did a good job in this draft class. Again, Jordan Morgan, not a sexy pick by any means, but taking him at 25 when we had him as the 32nd player in the draft, I think is – not horrific. Yeah, it's fine.
You know, like, I gave him a C. Like, yeah, it's fine.
Same thing goes with Cooper, right? I mean, you know, taking him at 45, he was the 37th ranked player. But, like, I really like the Javon Bullard pick. I think he was a guy that a lot of people would have liked to have seen in Chicago. Obviously, that was long before they brought in Kevin Byard to fill in the role that was, you know, vacated by Eddie Jackson. The Marshawn Lloyd pick, I don't love. Again, a guy as a running back, as a part of the building the board process, that there was something there, but I don't know if he's, you know, world beating by any means.
If he keeps fumbling, I love that pick.
Oh, sure. No. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Let him fumble. Let him just keep fumbling all the way along. But like you said, I mean, I know you were big on Jacob Monk in this draft queue. I really like the Oladapo pick out of Oregon State, because that's a guy that, even if he's not starting for you at safety right away, especially given the fact that he was the third safety they took in this draft class, he's a special teams guy, probably through and through day one. You know, and then again, a Michael Pratt is a fun flyer to take late in the draft. I think they did okay. Like, again, we've learned it. And Juice, I know you're going to be able to echo this. If it's got the horrific green G attached to it, it more likely than not is probably going to work out okay. Until it doesn't, I'm just going to assume that's going to be the case. So, you know, again, we might not love it on paper, but when, you know, three of these guys are Pro Bowlers in 2 years, you know, we're going to be sitting here yelling and screaming about it, because they're the green and yellow just shit stain of Wisconsin is going to inevitably piss off Bears fans. Let's just, it is what it is.
I think they all suck. Every single one.
I second that. Do you have any thoughts on this class, Juice? Just or do you just think it's massive, so some of them have to work, right?
Well, that's they got like Cardinal St. Louis Cardinal devil voodoo magic up there too. Like it's they're gonna sprinkle a little voodoo dust on top of them, and then they'll all turn into fucking stars, because that's just Green Bay for you. I hate them all already. I hate their names more than anything. I'll say that.
As their rookies walk into the facility for the first time, you think they just have like a big cheese grater over the door, and there's a guy just like sprinkling the cheese dust on them.
All I'm gonna say is, like, when they go up there, it's gotta be the most boring trip they've ever had in their life. No wonder why they're all good at football.
Flying into Appleton, Wisconsin.
Yeah, they got nothing to do. There. And then they got to drive all the way up there, and because they're Green Bay, and it's side note, since we are still talking draft, they're going to have the draft next year. Did you see all two hotels are already sold out? It's going to be a logistical nightmare.
How is it
the worst draft ever? Everyone's going to stay like 4 hours away. I hope it snows. Me too. I hope it hurricanes up there and just wipes them all out.
A hurricane in Green Bay. We'll see it. We'll live to see it.
Hey man, the way the weather's going now, anything can happen.
So I look at this class and I say, like, Jordan Morgan was a bit of a reach, but I mean, he's going to be a good pro, I think.
Former Bear.
He might never be a Pro Bowler, but I think he's going to be fine. What'd you say, Juice?
Former Bear Jordan Morgan.
Yeah, former Bear.
Went back. He
was so bad, he went back to college. But the one that really, and I gave him a C for Edgerrin Cooper, just because I felt like 45 is rich for a linebacker. Like, he was there on our board. That was about where he should have gone according to our board. But I don't like taking a linebacker that early. But a few of these really stand out to me. Kalen King in the 7th round. That's the type of low risk, high reward bet that makes a lot of sense, because he's really talented. He's just not good. So that's more than you can say about a lot of 7th round guys. It really is, right? Usually 7th round, you either got one, they're good football players, or they're really talented. But a lot of times in the 7th round, you have neither.
Yeah. Was that on your scouting? Was that on your scouting report?
That's pretty much a scouting report. He's really talented, but he's not good. Michael Pratt, I think low risk bets on quarterbacks in the 7th round, fine. That always makes sense. But the guy that stands out to me here is Travis Glover out of Georgia State. So at the Senior Bowl, he wasn't on the roster, but he was there practicing. He was wearing the number of a player named Jeremy Flax, who was not able to attend the Senior Bowl. And all week, I'm just hearing people say, like, man, Jeremy Flax looks good. Who's this Jeremy Flax kid? And we're just like, by day three, we're like, oh, that's not Jeremy Flax? It's Travis Glover? Who's Travis Glover? So the kid looked good at the Senior Bowl. Like, and he went under the radar because his name wasn't on the roster. Like, I've got the roster right here. Not sure if you can see that. Jeremy Flax's name is crossed out and Travis Glover's name is written next to it. Because, like, you had no idea who this guy was. You just knew he had a shiny silver helmet and you thought his name was Jeremy Flax.
That seems like a real fix for Green Bay. I'm gonna call tampering there.
That's the Green Bay's always got the fix. It's always in. They always know how the buttons to push to make sure they get their guy. Now,
unbelievable.
Like you said, Ron, I like Jacob Monk. I thought that was a really nice pick for them in the fifth round, and they moved up to get him. I think he was one of the last – him and Matt Lee were the two last centers on the board who I really liked, I think. Actually, Bo Limmer lasted until the seventh, so which was a shock. It actually scared me away from Bo Limmer because it was like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? That Brandon Thorne and Dame Brugler both put a fourth-round grade on him, and he is falling to the seventh. Like, I had a third-round grade on him. I think we pushed him up to even second that with positional value for the Bears. Like, I loved his tape, and – there was a video today. I saw him like squatting 700 pounds. It's ludicrous. I don't understand how that guy falls to the seventh. But either way, we're talking about the Packers draft here. I like Jacob Monk a lot. Evan Williams is a guy who Robert Schmitz, I trust him a lot when it comes to safety evals. And Evan Williams is a guy that he has talked about a lot as being showing some really nice stuff on his tape. So I hate that he's a Green Bay Packer now. But the one pick that I can really revel in. And watch, because I'm saying this, the guy's probably going to end up being magically good. But I did not like Tyron Hopper's tape at all, linebacker out of Mizzou, and they took him at 91 overall. Undersized linebacker who I didn't think he had very good coverage instincts and was mostly just like a blitzer. And I don't think he was like an Ivan Pace type player either, who's in Minnesota, was a rookie last year and was kind of like a blitzing weapon. I'm not sure that I'd say Tyron Hopper fits that mold either. So he's just a tweener to me. I just didn't see where his role would be in the NFL, but they took him at 91. So clearly they have something in mind for him that maybe he'll excel in. But right now I that's the pick. I'm sitting here going like, that's just the one there's that I don't like. But outside of that, the rest of them feel fine to good. So,
Evan Williams, real shitty bourbon.
If I'm, or let's do this. So, Ron, how would you grade these four drafts? What letter grade did you give them?
I think the Bears, I would confidently give an A-. I think the reason for that being, you know, just if they had more picks, they could have addressed potentially more needs. But I like what they did for what they were rolling with. I think for pick or for the Lions draft class, I'll give them a B+ because I don't necessarily like their draft more than the Bears, but I still really like their draft. I think they, again, they kind of were playing with house money. So I think that alone and just getting better at very critical positions on the football field always helps. I'm going to be down on Minnesota. I'm going to give it a C-, because, again, outside of those top two picks, the rest of that draft is, to me, just a whole lot of question marks. And then Green Bay's, I'm going to give it a B-, because, again, it's Green Bay. And I do like some of the picks they made. I just like their later picks more than their early picks, personally. But that's kind of where I'd rank the draft classes.
Juice, where are you sitting, buddy?
So I'm going to go A for the Bears, strictly because I think more than just the picks, it announces just new thinking within the organization. I love the idea of drafting, you know, Roma Dunze at 9 and getting a playmaker. And obviously, Caleb, I think it was going to be really hard after day one to not have an A grade for this. And everybody hates Torrey Taylor, but I think he's going to be, a difference maker. I think he's a great punter, and it's a way to protect the defense. I think he was a really smart pick. Detroit, I'm going to give them an A minus. I thought they were, we talked about it. Their corner play last year was god awful. And like we said in the recap here, they got, two top 30 guys. That's huge. I'm going to give Minnesota a C plus. I wish I could give incomplete in this, because I think it's going to matter a lot more if JJ's good. I think we could look at this grade as like a D minus if JJ's bad, but I think we could look at this at like a B plus A if JJ's a good player. And then Green Bay, it's just going to be a solid B. It's tons of picks. It's tons of chances. A couple of those guys are going to hit. But if you're truly asking me, it's an F because fuck the Packers.
I like that. An F for fuck the Packers.
That's great. I can support.
So for Chicago, I'm with Ron on this. I think I'm giving him an A minus, and it's going to be an A no matter what after the first two picks. They could throw the rest of the picks out the window. You got two of the best, safest prospects in the draft. That's an easy, you can't get lower than an A. And then the rest of it, the rest of the Bears draft, I pretty much give a C. So that has to come down to an A minus to me, because I gave Amagaji a C minus. I gave Torrey Taylor a D plus, and then I gave Booker a B plus, I think. Either B plus or A minus. That has to come out to an A minus. I think that makes sense. For Detroit, think I'm going, actually, I'm gonna push the Bears up to an A, because I like the Bears better than Detroit, but I think Detroit needs to be an A minus. Because I just think they got some great value in four of their six picks. I think that what they came away with is really nice. Minnesota, I'm just going to split the two of you. I'm giving them a C, because that is the worst good outcome I can think of in a draft. You fill your quarterback need with a guy who you're not quite sure about, but you also get a blue chip talent, and then you have no real picks after that. To me, that's the way that you flush that many picks down the drain. It's a C to me, because you did enough good that the fan base can be excited about it, but enough bad that it's highly questionable whether it was a good draft. Those two even out to just a flat C. And then Green Bay, I'm giving Green Bay a B plus, because you look at their class, they got multiple offensive linemen who are versatile and athletic, and I just think that's always a winning strategy. And anytime you can have that many draft picks, stuff is gonna work out for you when you're when you're throwing that much at the wall. So that's how I rank it. I'm pretty perplexed by how many people have Minnesota in A. I really am. It feels off to me, because you're basing that off a reach to fill a need at quarterback and a great pick with great value in Dallas Turner, who cost you 5 to 6 draft picks. This year and future. Next year's draft capital is screwed after this draft for them. They got very little. So I think that wraps it for us. You guys have any final thoughts you want to give on this?
I'm just happy the Bears are at the top of this thing, man.
I'm also happy that they didn't overthink 9.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we had the Ryan Paces of the world try to prove they're the smartest man in the room? It's like, and pick somebody else, and then somebody
generates. A few days ago, that might have happened in Atlanta.
Right. So that's why I'm just happy they didn't overthink it. Take the guy that was the best available there that fits a position in need, because you need to build this nest around Caleb Williams. And that's, to me, that's win. Anything after that was, now we're going to hope, you know, these projects, you know, pan out. And we may look back at that draft class, if they do, and be like, man, Poles cooked a hell of a meal.
Yeah. Man, you guys were on the stream with me. I was like 60-40. They're going to trade this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really thought they were going to trade out of 9. And I'm so glad that they didn't. But I really thought they were going to, because JJ was still on the board. And it was like the Raiders have to be calling, right? I'm thrilled they didn't. Looking back, if they did, they would have still gotten Byron Murphy. But I'd rather get Caleb all the sport he can possibly have. And I think it worked out perfectly. But that wraps it for us, guys. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for sticking with us through this and for paying attention to our draft content throughout all of it. Make sure to go to ontapsportsnet.com. We got Bears, we got Cubs, we got Bulls, White Sox, Blackhawks, golf, college football, gambling, and so much more. We got it all. So make sure to go check that out. And why don't you guys say we get out of here with a bear down?
Bear down, baby.
Bear down.
Bear down.